Welcome to the Subject Composition and Light Photography Podcast. Show notes, links, and contact details can be found at robnunphoto.com. That's www.robnunphoto.com. SCL is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, and loads of other great tech podcasts can be found over at www.techpodcast.com. Now on with the show. Hi everybody, and welcome to SCL episode 225 for the 4th of October 2013. Thanks everybody for hanging on and being patient. It's about a month since the last one. And got quite a full podcast today, I think. Quite a full one. A few things to talk about, what I've been up to, and some car boot bargains, as ever. And a few listener questions as well, which is almost a newer thing. Now, you may well be able to hear some music. Let me see if I can mute that. There we go. That's better, isn't it? You think I would be an expert at this by now, but I tell you, as you can probably tell by the audio quality of most of the podcasts and the videos I do, I'm not really. I tend to wing it most of the time. Well, I was just thinking, actually, how much I enjoy doing the podcast and how much I really appreciate everybody downloading and listening to it. 225 episodes, that's quite a long time, isn't it? That really is quite a commitment in terms of time, and I'm not really talking about me, I'm talking about you guys and girls downloading and listening to me. So at the top of the show, just thanks again for being around, downloading the podcast, doing the reviews on iTunes and on different other podcatchers, giving us the star reviews, because it really does mean a lot. And I know this is just a hobby, and it's not, you know, we're not up there with the high class podcasts of this world, but I like to think SCL and me and everybody who contributes through making comments on the blog or on iTunes or on Flickr, uploading the photos, we're all kind of contributing to our own little photo community and adding a little bit of knowledge to the photo world as a whole. So yeah, pat on the back for everybody, and may long it continue, fingers crossed, touch wood. So here we go. It's Friday, it's 20 to 2, quite unusual. I normally don't have days off during the week very often. They seem to be at the weekend, but today, because of other people have got time off the weekend, I'm here sitting at home. I've just finished my chores. I've vacuumed the house. I've cleaned the bathroom. I meant to dust, but I'm not going to bother doing that. I want to do some other stuff. This morning, I've already been out and about. What did I do? Well, I went and got some batteries for a camera. I don't think I've talked about this on the podcast yet, but I picked up a Nikon F65 film camera for, I think it was £3, from the Titchfield car boot a good few weeks ago. Might even be a couple of months ago. And the F65 is of that ilk of the last generation, well, the latest generation of Nikon film SLRs, because Nikon still do make a film SLR. Don't know what the current model is, but it's basically, it looks like a digital SLR, but just takes film. It's got an autofocus lens, 28-100, 3.5-5.6. It's got all the creative functions from manual, aperture priority, shutter priority, program mode, fully automatic mode, all the scene position mode, sports, night, silhouette, portrait, all that sort of stuff. It's got exposure bracketing. Looks like you can change the focusing point as well. It may well have a depth of field preview, but I'm not sure. But anyway, it takes CR2 batteries. So I went into town and popped into, I had to go and get a new iron, because our one blew up from, where did I go? Robert Dias, I think, for the iron. And then nowhere really had the batteries for it, so I went to London Camera Exchange in Fareham, which is one of the last camera shops, you know, dedicated camera shops you get in the UK, excuse me, and they're a nationwide chain, and a few of the chaps there used to work for Jessop's, and so I know a few of them, and also there's another reason I went there as well. But anyway, I went in there and they had the batteries, and they're quite expensive. It was £10 for two, but you know, it's worth it to fire it up and put some film through this Nikon F65, give it a blast, develop the black and white film, and do a nice review on YouTube on the site as well. But also the ulterior motive for going into the London Camera Exchange is they've currently got in that particular store a Canon 600D second hand body only for £290, I think, or £280. Very nice. So I kind of I asked to have a look at it. It's really clean. It's got the box with it and the battery and the charging instructions. So I've kind of got my BDI on it. I'm trying to think about how to bring out with Suzanne, actually, because my Christmas present this year, hopefully, again, touching wood, is going to be a new laptop, because my old Acer laptop, which was Oliver's old Acer laptop from, like, 2 years ago, he got his new laptop, so this thing's well old. Again, it's on its last legs. It keeps overheating and turning itself off, even though I've vacuumed it out. You know, that's going to be my main Christmas present, so how can I justify another £280 on a camera? But the 350D really is starting to creak a little bit. And the other side of it, actually, I've just went on Amazon and had a look, and you can buy a brand new 600D body for about £370. So for about another ton, you get a brand new camera body. So I don't know, what would you do? Would you buy the new camera body, or would you save £100 and go for the old camera body? I don't know. But anyway, I haven't got the money. I think what I might have to do is just bite the bullet and sell some of my camera gear. Now, that's not a sad thing, because I've got more than I can use. You know, I've got, like, K1000s, I've got, well, this Nikon, once I've reviewed it, I've got loads of vessels. I can't even remember what I've got. So I've got so many little film 35s and even the odd 120 that I picked up from the car boot sale. Maybe if I just sold them, got some money together, because they're just going to sit on the shelf gathering dust or in a drawer getting damp. Pass them on to people who can use them, then maybe just spend the money that way. But anyway, there we go. So that's what I've been up to today. And I also got some rechargeable batteries from Tesco for my flashes. You may well have seen the photo on the blog, the death of the allotment. Yes, woe is us. We finally decided to give up the allotment. With both me and Suzanne working full time now, it just hasn't been practical to keep it going. We got a rather embarrassing letter from the council who run it with a photograph of our allotment, and it looked like a jungle, saying, you know, come and sort it out, or, you know, you're going to have to give it up. So I went up there, stripped all the tools out, and sold the shed on the spot to somebody next door, and said, yeah, you know, that's it. So got plenty of photos from it. I had a bit of a love-hate relationship with the allotment, actually. I kind of hated the idea of going up there and doing work. But once I got up there with Suzanne and Oliver in the early days, you know, it was quite enjoyable being out in the sunshine and sort of digging in the earth and growing stuff. And I even, you know, mid taking my tools out the other week, I was kind of halfway through thinking, yeah, oh God, you know, if I just spent a couple of hours up here, I could cut it all down and get it looking respectable. But then again, I think, no, look, we just haven't got the time. I normally get about, what, 1 week out off, one day off a week. Suzanne's pretty much the same. And although the allotment was enjoyable up to a point, it was also a lot of work and a little bit of expense as well. And I think I would rather be spending my time with Suzanne and Oliver or photography than digging in the dirt. So that's come to an end. But who knows, when I'm retired, I'll probably have another crack of it that way. I've been doing a few reviews on YouTube, which will eventually end up on the robnumphoto.com website. I upload them to YouTube first. I was very lucky enough to be sent a carbon fibre tripod by Kenro. It was a Benro one. Very, very nice indeed. Gosh, this thing. I think it was just the sticks, and I think it was about £200 just for the sticks. And I was like, whoa. But it was beautiful. So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, tripods are tripods, aren't they? You know, that what you really want them to be is steady. That's the most important thing. But I'm not a big tripod user, apart from in the home. You know, I always use tripods when I'm doing my videos, or when I'm doing my portrait work. I'm always using a tripod. But I don't always take one with me outside, unless it's late at night or I'm doing sunsets and things like that, where the shutter speeds are going to be too long. But I tell you what, if you're interested in thinking about getting a tripod, a carbon fibre on it, and you weren't going to spend some money, have a look at the Benro ones. Kenro sell them. Just do a Google search for Benro tripod. Very, very nice indeed. Maybe more of interest to me anyway, is I also completed on YouTube and uploaded it a couple of days ago, my Zorki 4K Russian rangefinder review. This is the camera I picked up from the car boot sale again a few weeks ago for the majestical sum of £20. And I've really enjoyed working with this this camera. It's a It's a Soviet era. It says made in the USSR on the back of it. Coupled rangefinder. So what that means is, it's a metal-bodied camera, but you don't look like an SLR where you look through the viewfinder and see through the lens. The viewfinder is separate. But what you see in the viewfinder is in the middle, there's like this double image, and as you focus the lens, this double image moves over itself. So it's a different type of focusing. It took me a little bit of getting used to, but once I was, it's very, very simple to use. And the Zorki 4K is a copy, well, a development, if you like, of the Leica 3, Leica 3C, developed in Germany before the World War II, because what happened was, after World War II, the Russians requisitioned the Leica factories, equipment and engineers, and proceeded to make their own cameras, and they kind of developed over the years. And, you know, the Zorkis and the Feds have got a bit of a cult following. You could say it's a bit like a Lomography camera, but it's made a lot, lot better. Saying that, if you are looking at one, get one where the seller will assure you that it does work, because, you know, it's an old camera in the first place, and secondly, it's very easy to break them if you don't use them right. The golden rule, remember this, even if you never get one, because someone might pass one for you to have a go at, never, ever, 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 ever change the shutter speed without first cocking the shutter. And then you can change the shutter speed, and then you can fire it off. But a great camera. The viewfinder, when you're closer to subjects, isn't particularly accurate. Bit of a hit and miss, so you can find your cropping stuff. But using it is just, these old metal manual cameras, I've got something for them, you know. If they bring, I know there's a few Kickstarters around, isn't there, where people are trying to develop a digital sensor that you can put in a 35mm camera. If they do, I'll sell all my digital stuff, because I love using these manual clockwork cameras. There's just something so analog, well, I guess they are analog, aren't they, about them, about the fact that there's no batteries in it. You've got to use a light meter to, if you want an acceptably exposed image. Everything is done with springs and levers and switches. So something like, you know, the Zorki 4K, the Trip 35, the SRT101, the K1000, you know, these metal-bodied, fully manual, mechanical cameras, I just really like them. I like the feel of them. I like the touch. I like the sounds they make. I like what they smell. And I like doing them. However, saying that, I did put 3 films through the Zorki 4K. A couple of black and whites. and a film. And a colour film. And it was great shooting with it. But when I did get my 350D out again and start shooting with that, it was a really nice relief. So I don't know. That's why. Maybe. I tell you. Has anybody got one of those? Is it the Olympus OMDs? The one that the Olympus, that looks like an OM1 or an OM2, but it's a digital camera. They look nice, don't they? I bet they take beautiful photos. Maybe, I don't know, I'm digressing, aren't I? I've got the Canon 350D. I'm going to go for a Canon 600D with a flip-out screen, because I've got the lenses to go with it, and I've got my stuff. So there we go. But anyway, take it back to the Zorki 4K. Great little cameras. If you can get a hold of one cheap that works, shoot with it. It's a little piece of history. And it's like you're shooting with a little Leica. If you're in the UK, and this probably applies for the whole world as well, Rankin's Fashion Lifestyle, lots of other stuff, kind of magazine, Hunger, is out now, the autumn-winter issue. It's $6.95 in the UK, and it's $14.99 in America, which might seem like a lot of money, but it's packed full of great photography and interesting articles. If you're into your fashion or your editorial photography, it's not as good as the previous issues, though. I will say, it didn't hit me as quite hard as the previous ones. I think it's a little bit smaller, and they've changed the design a bit as well. But very good. Look out for that one if you want to spend a few quid. Go for it. What else have we got here as well? You'll also find on YouTube, and I'll put the links in the show notes over at robnumphoto.com for SEL episode 225. I've also done a video on manual macro extension tubes for my Canon camera. You'll know I've talked about extension tubes a lot in the past, and the idea with the extension tube is that you take your camera with your lens, and they're just these tubes that go between the camera body and the lens that they all sort of snaps together, and the idea is it enables you to be able to it doesn't really enable you to focus. It does enable you to focus closer, but it enables you to do macro photography on the cheap. The disadvantage with them, if you're using them with a camera like my Canon, is that you lose all the electronics, because there's no wires or bits transferring things like the aperture control or the autofocus control through to the camera. So you're using a fixed aperture and manually focusing. So it's a little bit tricky, but you can do it. And you can spend more money and get ones that do allow you, extension tubes that do allow you to transfer the electronics. So that's something I think I would definitely want, because the beauty with extension tubes is no glass in them, so you're not reducing the quality of the image. And they're very small. They can fit in your camera backpack or your camera or your pocket very simply, and you're immediately adding a fantastic macro capability to your photographic kit. So you see a nice flower, you see a nice insect, screw it onto your existing lens, bingo. I picked mine up for a couple of quid from the car boot sale. In the London Camera Exchange today, they had brand new ones for £20. I'd imagine if you go on YouTube, you can probably buy electronic ones that still allow you to autofocus and change the aperture of your lenses for not much more than that. So look out for them. I was very impressed. Because one thing I don't do is if I've got my normal photo kit on, which is my low-pro photo runner bag with my 350D with the 1855 on it, and then the 55-250 telephoto, and then batteries and cloth and stuff like that, I haven't got enough room for another lens, like a dedicated macro lens or an M42 lens with an M42 to EF adapter on it. But these extension tubes are small enough just to slip in the pocket, so I can always have them with me. To kind of come from the other side, actually, away from macro to the big, I was so lucky at the weekend at the car boot sale. So lucky. Wandering around, looking at stuff, feeling a little bit tired. We'd had a late night the night before, and came to this stall, and I saw a camera bag. Always a good sign when you see a camera bag, but it was empty. So I was like, looks inside, there's a few. The normal things you normally see in empty camera bags at a car boot sale, there's normally some shutter releases, the mechanical ones, and some filters. So I thought, there's probably something nice in here that's gone. But then I saw some books. Always on the lookout for photo books. Not much of a fan of the how-tos. Some of them are good, but just proper photo books. But I looked through them, and a few of them are how-tos. So I was like, ugh. But then there's Scott Kelby's digital photo books. Now, if you're a beginner photographer and you want to get better, some of the best books you can buy and best value for money books are Scott Kelby's digital photographer books. I've got 1, 2, and 3. I don't know if there's a fourth one out now, but they're very small. They're like A5 sort of size, and they're packed with fantastic information about how to take particular types of photographs and particular types of looks. In all the books, there's like these recipes of saying, if you want to take a picture where a bride or a woman or a man, for that matter, is nice and blurred background, and they're nice and sharp, you're going to need this. Now, I know not everybody likes Scott Kelby, and the thing you have to remember from his books is what he does like to say is, you will need to buy some stuff to take this sort of photographs, but you don't have to. You don't have to buy the kit that he recommends, because I'm not saying that he does take backhanders or even sponsorship money from the people he mentions, but you don't need to buy a dedicated proper Canon flash to do off camera, or pocket widgets to do off camera flash. There are cheaper versions, but putting that to one side, the information in these books is very, very good. They're very, very small. They're excellent as reference books and as refreshers, just to dig out and have a look through. And if you don't fancy buying them, get down to your local library. I know the Hampshire County Council system has got definitely all three in the system somewhere, so you just have to go down there, order them for 50p, and they'll get delivered to wherever you are, your local library, and you can look at them. Highly recommended. So, from this pile of books, I've got digital photography book 2 and 3, so I've got three of them now, and there's also an interesting reference book on lighting, which I flicked through, that didn't have fantastic photos in it. I didn't open and go, oh, they're brilliant photos, but what it was like, if you want this look, This is what you get from one flash. You know, this is what you get from a flash and a reflector. So it was just lots and lots of pictures of people's faces, like the same model, a lady model and a man model, with different lighting setups. So I thought that would be really good to go through, just to practice. Because one of the things I've definitely found from doing more kind of almost studio-based portrait photography in our house is it seems like it's really simple to do off-camera flash and strobist type photography, but it isn't. You know, it's easy to do it badly, but it's very difficult to do it very, very well. But this kind of relates into the other thing that was on this stall at the British Mary Cabo, which was a complete lighting backdrop setup. I looked over and I saw a light stand. I thought, I've got two light stands, don't really need any more. And I was running a bit short of cash, but then I saw what looked like big light stands. And straight away I thought, wait a minute, they're part of a backdrop. And this is the type of backdrop, I mean, where you have these two, like, they're oversized light stands that go up. And then you have a telescopic one that goes over the middle. And in effect, you create like a massive goalpost, like a football goalpost or a soccer goalpost, which you then hang off a backdrop, so that might be a muslin backdrop, a paper backdrop, whatever. And I sort of thought, oh wow, and there was some paper there as well. I thought, oh, this is the sort of thing I've been looking at on eBay and thinking about buying. And I was like, ooh. So, you know, I said to the chap there, I said, is this a photo backdrop, is it? And he says, yeah, do you want me to set one up? And I was thinking, oh, not really, because I don't want anybody else to see what it is. Because I said, there's some paper here. He said, yeah. He said, there's some paper that's already been cut, but then there's a whole roll of white backdrop paper, seamless backdrop paper as well. And I thought, ooh, gosh, this is very interesting indeed. This is just what I fancy. And I said to him, well, how much do you want for it? And he said, £15. Now, I only had a fiver. Luckily, I mean, me and Suzanne, a lot of the time, we'll split up at the car boot sale and do different bits, but she was with me, and I said, Suzanne! Give me a tenner. So for £15, I didn't know what condition it was in. Got it home. It looked like it had been used. You know, it wasn't brand new, but it was heavy duty. You know, it was a big thing. Got it home. Had a look at it. A couple of the little knobs needed a little bit of work with a little bit of epoxy resin, a little bit of super glue. But this thing, the telescopic centre, okay, is 12 feet wide. It's huge, and these light stand thingies, these heavy-duty light stands, are 12 feet, you can extend them to 12 feet high as well. This thing is absolutely massive. The pieces of paper are probably, there is a standard size, is it like 1.3 metres or something like that? And there's loads of that as well. I mean, it's huge. And what it enables you to do is have that studio look. You know, normally you'd be in a big studio, and you would put the stand up, the goalpost, if you like, you hand the paper off, and the paper then comes round in a curve, so that when the person's standing on the paper, you can do full-length shots, yet they have this whole seamless white, or black, or grey, whatever colour you want, background if you're using paper. And you get that look. Now, our house is nowhere near big enough to do that. But actually, I was sitting downstairs having my lunch just before I was recording the podcast in the in our back room, our dining room, where we have the big telly and the dining table. And I was thinking, wait a minute, if I move the dining table to one side or on its side, I reckon I could put the backdrop up. And then what I would do is open the French doors that go out into the garden, and if I then stood out with my camera out in the garden shooting into the room, I could probably get decent full length shots. Now, you probably think, well, just use a wide angle lens. Well, I could, but the problem obviously is when you use wide angle lenses with portraits, everything gets a bit distorted, doesn't it? You know, for nice looking portraiture photography or full length photography or even three quarter or headshots, really you've got to get a little bit further away and use a longer lens, because that is a lot more flattering. But anyway, I'm really looking forward to playing around with this, and I discovered there's a couple of the little screw bits are a little bit loose because the metal inserts are sliding around, but it's all easily fixable with a little bit of glue, and so I'm well chuffed. So the moral of the story is, you know, go to enough car boot sales, go to enough garage sales, go to enough thrift stores, and eventually, I mean, I can't think of anything, really, beyond a new camera or something like that I really need for my photography that I haven't managed to pick up secondhand from a car boot sale or a thrift shop. I mean, I have been so lucky, thank the Lord, and thanks Suzanne for dragging me to the car boot sales all the time to pick this stuff up, you know, really, really good. What else have I been up to? Oh, a really good exercise that I put myself through was, if you don't listen to the Candid Frame podcast by Ibn Eric Perello already, do so. Pause the podcast now, go to iTunes or Podcatcher, or do a search on Google for the Candid Frame and start subscribing to the podcast. There's these fantastic interviews with professional photographers, artists, all sorts to do with the visual arts. Very inspirational. You'll learn a lot as well. And one of the things that he started to doing is he's doing a big push to expand the Candid Frame. And he's decided to allow people to submit listener profiles. So the idea is that you get together your 10 best images, email the link to him, and he sends you an interview form where he's asked you all these questions, and then he's going to put it on his website. You know, cool. You know, get a little bit of exposure, perhaps, maybe a few more people see my photos. But then I sat back and thought, oh gosh, you know, so I've got to pick 10 photos from all my photos from the last few years, my best ones. And I tell you what, it was a real cathartic experience. It was really good. I mean, I'm quite lucky in the fact that my online portfolio, if you like, is Flickr. You know, everything that I think is half decent that I've taken, I upload to Flickr to share it with everybody. And then anything that I think is really good on Flickr, I have a separate Flickr set called Rob Nunn's Photo Slideshow. So they're the better ones, you know, better again. And then also, recently, last year, I chose a few photos from those ones for a portfolio. I did two portfolios, I think one pre-2012 and one after 2012 and after. And so I've been through this kind of section before, so I haven't got like 10,000 images to look through. You know, there's a finite number that I've had to go through, but to choose 10 was really, really difficult. But I did manage to do it, and I would recommend anybody who, if you want to kind of try and figure out what your style is or where you want to be taking your photography, try and choose 10 best photos of all your photos you've ever taken. You probably won't see the sets. In fact, I tell you what I'll do is I'll put a link to the set in the show notes, because I did the set of these 10 photos on Flickr. And what I will be doing is creating a PDF portfolio to put it on the site, but I probably won't get around to doing that for a few weeks. So, you know, you can have a look at them. And they're just the photos, I think, that are my best ones from over the last sort of 5 years. And, and it was a great experience to go through it. So thanks, CyberNX, for offering that. I mean, I don't know whether my photos will get accepted and he'll put me up on as a listener profile, but the exercise of simply doing it was a massive learning experience. Anyway, phew, so there we go. So that's what I've been up to over the last few weeks. I did do a nice flash photo of John at work's CBR 600 as well, because he's going to be selling it, and he wanted some nice photos for eBay, so I might post that one in the show notes as well. What I'm probably going to do is I'll talk about that a lot more maybe next time, because I'm going to try and persuade him to allow me to do a portrait of him in his leathers standing next to the bike, and it's all going to be with off-camera flash, you know. So the idea is to dim everything down with my aperture, so that so it becomes like a dull day, and then I'll use flash to light everything up to make it nice and dramatic. So here we go. So questions. Now, I do get sent quite a few questions anyway, and I try to answer them directly. But one thing I have noticed is I'm terrible on YouTube for answering any comments that appear on the videos. I just ignore them because there's so many. And I thought, that's really nasty, that, isn't it? If people take the time to watch my video and ask me a question, why on earth don't I answer it? So I've decided I'm going to start doing that. And then if there's any interesting questions as well that I thought might be pertinent, I'll include them in the podcast. So the first one is one from Sushanta Rocker, and he or she asks, does the 55-250mm Canon IS lens work on the Canon 1100D too? And the answer to that is yes. Never be scared to ask this sort of question, because a lot of the time, maybe I assume that everybody knows this, but with Canons, the lens mount on consumer cameras, so your everyday sort of SLRs, DSLRs, is the EF lens mount, and that goes straight from, you know, the cheapest ones like the 1100D to the, I don't know, the 5D Mark 10 or whatever they're on now. It's all an EF mount. However, the crop sensor bodies, so the cheaper bodies, up to things like the 7D, will also take, they take EF lenses, but they'll take EFS lenses. And it probably doesn't, but think of EFS as the S as in small. Because the sensor on the consumer cameras, like the 1100D, the 650D, the 700D, 7D, it's smaller. I think it's 1.6 times smaller than a piece of 35mm film. So Canon, along with lots of other manufacturers, have designed lenses that are smaller and lighter to suit that particular sensor. And so for your particular camera, any lens that says EFS will fit, and any lens that says EF will fit. If, however, you move over to a full-frame camera, like a 5D Mark II, 5D Mark III, 1D Mark bloody blah, some of them are full-frame as well, the EFS lenses don't fit, because they're designed to work with that small sensor, so they would only use the middle bit. Now, whether they physically fit or not, actually, I don't know. They might physically fit, but you're not meant to use them, because what can happen is, especially with the wide-angle lenses, is because the lens sticks into the body, when the mirror comes down, it hits it, and you can damage not only your body, but the lens as well. So EFS lenses for or your crop sensor bodies, but EF lenses you can fit to any of the Canon EOS systems. So there we go. Orchid9938 asks, does the Lowepro Flipside 400 AW camera bag fit two DSLR bodies? Oh, definitely. The 400 AW bag, which I've had for, I don't know, 3 or 4 years now, is absolutely massive. If anything, it's too big. I remember looking at it for Christmas a few years ago, and I was kind of thinking, I want a big camera bag for Christmas, a backpack. Don't want one on wheels, want a backpack, but I want a really big one so I can fit all the kit in that I might possibly need to take out on a photo walk. And the 400 you can fit in two bodies, two massive telephoto lenses, an extra three or four wide angle lenses. You could probably fit a laptop in the front of it, you know, an ultrabook, all your flashes, everything. You can put so much kit in there you can't physically pick the bag up. It's a very good bag. If you can, though, I would say, always go to your local camera shop, see if they sell bags, take some of your kit down there and have a look, because when it gets too big, like really I think like the 400AW is, I don't tend to use it at all. It's really just the storage box in my wardrobe to keep my stuff from not getting dusty. So there we go. So it's a great bag, will fit two bodies, but it is very, very big. Adam Inkabroglus asks, how would we scan 35mm film if we wanted to include the sprockets along the side of the film? Ah, now this is interesting, because this is something I want to do as well. So you know, when you shoot 35 through a 120 camera, or through something like the sprocket rocket from Lomography, the edges of the film get exposed, you know, the ones with all the cutouts with the sprockets in, and that develops too, so you can get pictures on them. But most film scanners, flatbed scanners, or even dedicated film scanners, they come with these inserts, these trays that you put the film into, which covers up the sprockets so you can't scan them. So it's like you're losing the point of it. I think scanned sprockets are pretty damn cool as well, you know. So how do you do it? Now, you can buy something called the Digitalizer, D-I-G-I-T-A-L-I-Z-A, from Lomography, which is like a magnetic insert, again, that you would use with your flatbed scanner. And it holds the film nice and straight. I guess it does it at either end, so you can still see the sprocket, so you can then scan it and show them. However, this is what I'm going to do next time, when I put some 35 through a 120, is, and a few people mentioned this on the web as well, is you just lay your film down onto your flatbed scanner, and then you put a piece of glass over the top of it, so the glass holds the film flat, and you might well have to tape the film down as well. And sometimes they say, oh, you need to use special glass and stuff, but I guess you could just use the glass out of a picture frame, couldn't you? Give it a good clean, so it's nice and clean, and have a go that way. Now, you'll probably end up with things called Newton's rings, but if it's Lomo, you want all of those little effects, don't you? So that's what I'm going to have a go at next time, and, you know, if you fancy having a go at it, and you've got some film where the sprockets have been exposed as well, have a go. Put it on your flatbed scanner and put a piece of glass on top to hold everything down, and then scan it that way. Right, who have we got next? Matt Jones. And he says, with reference to the Minolta Auto Meter 2 light meter, can you set the shutter speed and get the meter to give you an aperture reading, or will it only give you a shutter speed reading? Well, Matt, the Minolta Auto Meter 2 is a very old light meter, and it's a dial type, and the way it works is, you turn it on, you press the button, the dial spins, and then you just read off the combination, so it just has combinations of like, F5.6, 250th of a second, you know, F8, 1/125th of a second. You can't, it doesn't work like that. The modern digital ones do, lots of them do, where you put in, look, my aperture is F11, and you take the light meter and it says, well, there, you know, you need to be at a quarter of a second. But the Autometer 2 doesn't work like that. It works the old-fashioned way, in the fact you have a spinning disc, which then has all the combinations on that way. Ken Byer asks, he's watched the Minolta Dynex 500 SI video and says, hi Rob, thanks for the info. Where can a person find a user's manual for this camera? Well, if you've got an old camera, an old 35, and you want to find the manual for it, chances are you look on butkus.org, butkus.org, and he, if you go down a little bit, he's got the link to all these camera manuals. He has hundreds, if not thousands, of old camera manuals that he's scanned in, and they're all free to download and look at. By all means, leave him a donation to go towards running of the site, and that'll help. However, I couldn't find the Dynex 500 SI on that site, so I just did a basic Google search and found a link to it. So all I would say to you is, just do a Google search for Dynex 500 SI manual, and about the second one down is at manualslib.com. And you go there, and there's lots of ads all around the PDF, but it comes up with a PDF on the screen, and you can download it, and you can flick through the manual that way. Okay, so that's it for the questions. Just one last final thing, and that's to talk about the assignment we've been doing recently, which was the July, August, and September one, the free lensing assignment, where we were taking photographs with our cameras without actually having the lenses attached to them, having them the wrong way around, or just detached them. Great work over on the Flickr Photo Group. It was probably wasn't the most popular assignment, mainly because you had to have an SLR. I didn't really think about that when I said it. You had to have an SLR. If you didn't have an SLR, it was very difficult. If you're just using camera phone, we couldn't really do much. And if you're using a compact or a bridge, you know, you can't take the lens off. You could have put something in front of it, but you know, that probably wouldn't have worked very well. So my apologies for that one. I should have thought about that more. So as we go on to October and November, hey, let's take advantage of what's outside. Autumn or fall. Same thing, aren't they? That's going to be the assignment. Anything that comes into your head, anything you see, you think that's to do with autumn or fall. Could be trees, could be leaves, could be weather, could be, I don't know, anything you want. Autumn or fall. Go over to the robnumphoto.com Flickr group. The link's on robnumphoto.com. Remember, it's free to join, free to participate. Stick your photos in the thread, which should be up over the next few days. Ideally, take new photographs, please. That whole point of these assignments is to get us out there shooting. Put them in and, you know, enjoy. Now, I do know that it's spring in the Southern Hemisphere, Australia, South America, etc. So if you want to take spring shots, fantastic. Post them in there too. The more, the merrier. Right, well, that's it for this week. Just remains to say thank you for everybody for taking part in the Flickr group, for putting comments on robnumphoto.com, for doing the reviews on iTunes. Really appreciate that, and giving us the 5-star reviews. Fantastic. And on all the other places where you download your podcast, if you can give us a good review, that helps us to get more listeners, which means that I can maybe even get a sponsor back again one day. Thanks to Everyday Jones, who do the intro and outro music. You can find their stuff for free download at everydayjones.com. But most of all, I'd like to thank you once again for downloading and listening to the podcast. My name's Rob from robnumphoto.com. Thanks for listening.